Penguin Random House Audio presents Pathogenesis, A History of the World in Eight Plagues, written and read for you by Jonathan Kennedy.
Introduction. Primordial Plagues. Where the telescope ends, the microscope begins. Victor Hugo. Through the Looking Glass. According to Sigmund Freud, there have been three great revolutions in Western science, and each of these dealt a blow to humans' belief in their special status, or what he referred to as our naive self-love. The first, which began with Copernicus, was the revelation that the Earth is not the center of the universe, but just one of several planets revolving around the sun. After this setback, we could still console ourselves with the Book of Genesis' claim that God created humans in his own image and gave us dominion over the land, sea, and animals, albeit in a location that was astronomically peripheral. Then Charles Darwin came along and pointed out that humans are just another species of animal and that we share a relatively recent common ancestor with apes. The third great scientific revolution, according to Freud, was his own discovery of the unconscious. The realization that we aren't even in control of our own thought processes was, he argued, the most irritating insult to the human mania of greatness. Freud's suggestion that psychoanalysis is more significant than the Copernican or Darwinian revolutions seems a little, well, egotistic. But his general point, that the more humans learn about the world, the more insignificant we realize we are, is insightful. For example, advanced telescopes have revealed that the Earth is an infinitesimally small rock rotating around an unremarkable star in a galaxy of at least 100 billion stars, which itself is just one of many billions of galaxies in the universe. In addition to this, there have been other scientific revolutions that have further undermined our species' high opinion of itself. To my mind, the most important of these is the discovery of a world as vast as outer space, and yet so tiny that it is invisible to the naked eye, the realm of bacteria, viruses, and other microbes. In the early 17th century, Galileo realized that when he reversed the order of the lenses in his telescope, very small things became visible. For the first time in history, humans had the technical capacity to see microbes, but Galileo preferred to focus his efforts on observing the stars and planets in the sky. And it wasn't until 50 years later that a haberdasher from Delft in the Netherlands began to explore the microscopic world. Antony van Leeuwenhoek initially developed his lenses to inspect the quality of the textiles he bought and sold. But after a while, he turned his gaze upon the natural world. His letters to the Royal Society in London describe how everything from a drop of water to the plaque on our teeth is alive with what he called animalcules. He was enraptured. "No more pleasant sight has ever come before my eyes," he said. In all of history, Leeuwenhoek's discovery of the microscopic realm might well be the closest anyone has come to falling down the rabbit hole, climbing through the looking glass, or stepping into a wardrobe and finding oneself in a world of fantastical creatures. It wasn't until the second half of the 19th century, a full 200 years later, that scientists finally began to comprehend the significance of the new world that Leeuwenhoek had stumbled into. Louis Pasteur, the French chemist, revolutionized our understanding of nature by demonstrating that animalcules were responsible for a variety of processes, including the fermentation of grapes, souring of milk, and putrefaction of meat. He also proved illnesses and infections were not caused by gods, black magic, imbalanced humors, bad smells, or inauspicious planetary alignments. Rather, people became sick when minuscule, invisible pathogens in the environment enter our bodies. But it is now very clear that animalcules are not just agents of decay, death, and disease. In the last couple of decades, researchers have begun to appreciate how bacteria and viruses perform a wide range of roles that are vital to the functioning of our planet, bodies, and even our minds. Human life, indeed complex life in any form, is inconceivable without microbes. The Tree of Life. In the summer of 1837, fresh from a 5-year voyage around the world on HMS Beagle, Darwin made a sketch in his notebook under the words, "I think." The unassuming doodle of what looks like the branch of a tree neatly captures the main features of what would develop into his theory of evolution by natural selection. When populations from a single species find themselves living in different surroundings, random variation, combined with natural selection for traits that provide an advantage in each particular environment, eventually results in the emergence of a separate species. This process, repeated again and again over hundreds of millions of years, accounts for the kaleidoscopic variety of life forms on our planet. When the genealogy of all living things is mapped out on paper, it looks like a vast tree. If we trace the tree of life to the base of its trunk, we find the last universal common ancestor, Luca. A single-celled, bacterium-like organism that is the distant progenitor of all living things, humans included. This one shared antecedent is the reason why everything from blue whales to giant redwoods to bacteria have inherited common features, such as DNA to store genetic information and a molecule called ATP that is the universal source of energy. Moving up the tree, the trunk splits into three boughs that represent the great domains of life. Two of these consist of organisms invisible to the naked eye, bacteria and archaea, single-celled microbes that resemble bacteria. The third branch depicts eukaryotes, which are distinguished by storing their DNA in a nucleus and using specialized structures called mitochondria to produce energy. This category encompasses all complex life, including animals, plants, and fungi, but it makes up only a few small twigs in the vast tree of life. There are about 8.7 million species of animals, plants, and fungi on Earth, compared to an estimated 1 trillion, that's 1 million million, types of bacteria and archaea. Less than 0.001% of all species on the planet are eukaryotes. The American paleontologist Stephen Jay Gould argues that, on any possible, reasonable, or fair criterion, bacteria are and always have been the dominant forms of life on Earth. One reason for this is the sheer length of time they have existed. Our planet was formed around 4.6 billion years ago. About a billion years later, the first evidence of bacterial life appears in fossils. Single-celled eukaryotes emerged some 1.8 billion years ago, but it took more than a billion years for the oldest multicellular animals to evolve, and even then they were tiny worm-like creatures. Humans are relative newcomers. We diverged from chimpanzees between 6 and 8 million years ago, and the earliest evidence of Homo sapiens dates back about 300,000 years. Such immense periods of time are hard for the human brain to conceptualize. But if we compressed 4.6 billion years into one calendar year, then bacteria evolved in the early spring. Humans don't appear until about half an hour before midnight on the 31st of December. Bacteria are everywhere. They've been found in Antarctic glaciers and on the ocean floor where boiling hot water surges out of the center of the Earth. They live miles below the ground and miles above it, where they influence the formation of clouds and possibly even lightning. They are so numerous that, despite their tiny size, the total mass of all bacteria on the planet is 35 times that of all the animals, and 1,000 times the weight of all humans. But bacteria are not just ubiquitous. They have also had a profound impact on our planet. About 2.5 billion years ago, our world was almost completely submerged in water, with the exception of the odd volcanic peak piercing through the sea. Methane in the atmosphere created a greenhouse effect that kept the planet far hotter than it is today. There was little or no free oxygen in the water or air, as it was all locked up in other molecules. Life on Earth consisted of anaerobic bacteria. Then, the world began to change with the emergence of cyanobacteria, blue-green algae that use the sun's rays to power photosynthesis. This process made cyanobacteria.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?